Thank you, Mr. McLean, and happy Day of Atonement to everybody. We heard that earlier. Happy Day of Atonement. Hope all you are doing well. Welcome to any visitors we have. I know we have some who are not here today because they are not feeling healthy. I wish you a speedy recovery and that you may be able to make it to the feast and your plans are not interrupted. So it is good to see everyone here today. The hall is fairly filled in. I thought it might be empty, but it's good. It's good to see everyone. Any of our young ones fasting for the first time? Well, that's always the risk. Thank you for doing that. You ask anyone has fasting for the first time and an elder puts their hand up. It's always a grave concern, but we'll talk about that later. So anyways, oh, that was pretty good, Andy. Thank you for doing that. Didn't see that one coming. All right, I want to start out and ask a question. How did we get here? How did we get here? And when will it end? I want to use these two questions to frame my message today because they're important questions. When I say, how did we get here? It's an important question because we certainly did not start here. Let's go to Genesis, if you would, the first chapter. Go to Genesis, the first chapter. This is a creation account, and I think it's interesting in here. God must be the master of the understatement, I think, at times, because this is the creation account, and if we just step back for a second and remember what's happening, the whole universe is being put together. And five times God, at the end of certain days, says that, you know, God looked at it, he saw it, and he said, it was good. It was good. Imagine, you know, I struggle to, you know, change light bulbs at home. But here he's putting together everything. It's good. And he got to the very end in verse 31, where I think God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. Christ took a moment there and looked at everything that had been made. It was very good. It was the evening and the morning or the sixth day. And you go back to verse 27, God created man in his own image, the image of God. He created him, male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves. God said, I have given you every herb that yields seed, and the seed which is in the face of all the earth, every tree whose fruit yields seed, it shall be to you for food. Sorry for all the food talk there for a moment. Also to every beast of the field, every bird of the air, everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given green herb for food, and it was so. God had given everything that man needed. It was good. It was very good, God said, when he finally stopped. And you look at the end of chapter 2, now we have man and woman on the scene, and it says they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. Everything was good. There was nothing that was in that situation that God had put together for man that was not good. So when I ask, remember that question, because I saw a couple puzzled looks, how did we get here? Because that's where we were. God himself said, I have put something in front of you. I have prepared something that is going to be very good. He said, go and multiply, enjoy all the stuff that you need here for a happy, a wonderful existence is right in front of you. And man and woman were there with nothing else, and they were fine. They were all good. And then we go down just a couple of inches in my Bible. In verse 6 of chapter 3. Verse 6 of chapter 3. Before that, all of a sudden, everything was good, but then the serpent just happened to be on the scene, and he asked the woman, we'll go back to verse 2. She said, we can eat all the fruit of the trees, but of the fruit of the tree which was in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said to the woman, you won't die. Pretty straightforward statement. What you have been told, don't worry about that. That's not going to happen. For God knows in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be open. You will be like God, knowing good and evil. And so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise. She took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave to her husband with her and ate. Now, it's pretty interesting because here she was set in this garden setting that God had put in there. And I'm sure that tree was beautiful and I'm sure it was wonderful. But I bet with everything else that God had provided, it probably wasn't really top of mind. It probably didn't really come to her consciousness to worry about that tree. She even said that. He said, don't go to that spot. Everything else is yours. But as soon as the thought was planted that this could be something that could provide you something, when she saw it was good, she was enticed. What did it say? It was good for what? It was good for food. God just said what in the chapter 1? I've given you all this stuff to eat. All this stuff is here. You don't need anything else. I've given you all that. But the tempter, the evil one, said, this is good for you. It's good for food. It's desirable now. It's pleasant to the eye. It'll make you wise. Before, there was not that thought in there. When the serpent entered the Garden of Eden, he offered a substitute way of life. He offered a replacement to what God had freely given. I've titled this message, A Day of Substitution. A Day of Substitution. Because Satan came on the scene, and what is substitution? I know some of you would like a math exercise. We could go there. If I said 5x equals 20, what is x? Of course. 4, yes, substitution. X equals 4. In this situation, Satan's substitute, he came to the scene to replace what God had offered. What God had put on the scene, and in an instant, when we read chapter 2, at the very last verse, they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. They were not ashamed. As soon as they ate that fruit, what happened in verse 7 of chapter 3? The eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made for themselves covering. See, Satan offered a substitute way of life. He offered a way of life that there was no talk of any cost. There was no price tag. There was no even fine print. There was no talk of payment terms. There was no talk of a balloon payment. Anyone know what a balloon payment is? It's not a party where you get everyone there. We have a balloon party. You know balloon payments, right? It all goes for a long time, and at the end, you owe a whole lot when you can't afford it. And I say this always to our young people especially. I see some of them here. You might say, oh, what's he talking about? Satan offers something that looks very, very good. The substitute that he provided looked very good to Eve. She partook. But there was a heavy price tag. A price tag, young people, that comes later. It comes later in life where there's sin and there's suffering and there's separation. And things can't be unwound that easily 10, 15, 20 years later in life. And the pain of that consequence of that substitute way of life is now fully on top of you. Go to John 10 in verse 10. It all looks very good at the beginning. But today is a day of substitution. We're going to walk through a couple more math equations, so I'll keep one person engaged anyway. But we're going to talk about a couple other substitutions along the way. John 10 and verse 10. And as soon as this happened, as soon as the serpent came, as soon as that bite was taken, mankind now has been under that separation, that suffering, for the one who is described by Jesus Christ in verse 10 as the thief. So many names we ascribe to the deceiver. This is certainly one of him. The thief who does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. That's the fine print. That's not always handed out to every person when they engage with this substitute way of life. You always don't get that last page off the copier because it costs too much, I guess. Right? You don't get that last page, but that's what the fine print says. That's why he came in, and Jesus says he doesn't come in the front door. That's what he said in John 10 and verse 1. He hops the fence and gets in there, and he shouldn't be there because he got one motive. To steal, kill, and destroy. It's really interesting in Genesis 3 when you read that account. We go from a man and a wife there enjoying this whole garden, created the way God had created them, and then all of a sudden we see the serpents there. Sort of interesting how he just appeared, how he appears here as well with the sheep. Hops the fence, he's there. Because he's in to kill and destroy. Go to Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6. I stress this to our young people, but I stress this, it's important to all of us. Because this is now a time where Satan has replaced the way of life that God intended for mankind. And it looks good. It looks wonderful on the surface. But Paul issues this warning in Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6 and verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against what? Against the wiles of the devil, the schemes, the plot, the trickery. We are absolutely no match for the adversary. No match. We'll see it in the garden. We'll see it in Revelation at the end in a very difficult verse that's even hard to read. Because Satan has us every time. So Paul is saying we can't do it. We better arm ourselves here with the armor of God. With the tools, as we heard, right? The tools that Paul talks about. Because otherwise it's an unfair battle. And he says the wiles, because we don't wrestle in verse 12 against flesh and blood. I think that's so interesting. Sometimes it's always that person next to me who's the problem. Well, they might be a bit of a problem, but they're not the source. It's the next window over, right? It's the one who came in the garden, the one who came to kill and destroy. Because Paul says here, we don't fight against flesh and blood, against principalities is who we fight against. Powers, rulers of darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. That's what came into the garden. That's the substitution that took place. Right out of the gate, mankind became victim to Satan. Let's go back into the garden. Let's go back into the garden. I think on this day, this is a good section of scripture to look at. Because all was going so well till that bite of the fruit took place. Chapter 3 is a difficult chapter because God has to tell man and woman what their fate is going to be. It's going to be a difficult life. I remember a friend asking me once, why is life so hard? Why is it so difficult? I said, go to Genesis 3. God said, now it's going to be hard. And I was thinking about, as I was thinking about this message, this Day of Atonement has so many words that begin with the letter S. I wish I had time for a PowerPoint. I would just keep putting them up there, right? Because it's sin, it's Satan, it's subtle, it's separation. We'll get to more of them. But it's God's spirit, this spirit. You'll see it's all these words that begin with that. And that's what we have here because in Genesis 3, verse 21, God tells him how difficult life is going to be. And in verse 21, it says, also for Adam and his wife, the Lord made tunics of skin and clothed them. So even after man had sinned, God made clothes for them. Because remember, man, back in verse 7, they tried to clothe themselves with fig leaves and things like that. Because now sin and shame had entered the situation. And they tried to hide themselves. But it was inadequate. And if you stop and you just think about in the moment, what was happening here, but you can also fast forward in your mind. There's so much symbolism about what is being described here. That God covered them. Mankind in his sin is inadequate to cover that up. Mankind cannot cover that up. God has to cover our sin. God provided for man who had just sinned with these tunics to cover them. Showing again his mercy, even in this moment. You know, today is called the Day of Atonement. In the Hebrew, Yom Kippur. That word Kippur means Covering. Kapar is the word, K-A-P-H-A-R in the Hebrew. It's the same word that is the same Greek word for mercy seat, which is what? The covering, the lid over the ark where the blood was sprinkled. And then God was over the top of the mercy seat in a cloud. It was almost like covering, and then God's presence was there. This is covering upon covering. Mankind cannot, we cannot cover ourselves and our goodness or whatever we try to do to make up for our shortfall, our sin. God intervened here in the first act of mercy and covering. And he gave them what they needed. He gave them something. He showed mercy at this time that's extended out through time. It's interesting, too, when you look at this, in order to have a skin, an animal skin, this implies there was a sacrifice. An animal was sacrificed. So this is our second substitution. If I said 7x equals 21, what is x? Thank you. Okay, he's still with us. All right, this is our second substitution here because at a time when mankind could do nothing for himself to cover his sins, something was given. A life was given when a life was required. In this situation, an animal was given. An animal was given so that they could live. You look at the Old Testament. We could spend the rest of our time. We could stay long if we wanted to. We could just go through Exodus and Leviticus, right? He knows. We could just talk about all the... There was a lot of sacrifice. There was a lot of blood. There was a lot of offerings. There was a lot of instruction. What happened? Something was given so a person's life did not have to be taken. There was a replacement. There was a substitution given. Instead of a person dying, an animal was sacrificed. In this situation, what did it say? God made tunics, sacrificed an animal, gave them covering, gave them mercy, and they lived. We look through all the instruction to Israel. What happened on this day? Right? Sacrifices were made to do what? To atone for the sinner, to stand in place of, to be a substitute for that person. That happened because man was separated by sin from God because of Satan's way, and now there's separation. So we see this whole thing of sacrifices being offered. Think about Exodus 12 with the Passover. What were the Israelites instructed to do? Sacrifice a lamb, smear it on the doorpost. So that was accepted in place of, it was a substitute for a firstborn. So their firstborn would not die. With this whole system of sacrifice, what we read this all the time, but what? It happened year after year after year. This system of sacrifice. Go to Leviticus 16. We'll just look at that because today that's Leviticus 16, the Day of Atonement. There was a lot that was sacrificed on this day. Leviticus 16 and verse 9, amongst the other things that Aaron brought, in verse 9, he brought a goat on which the Lord's lot fell, and it was offered as a sin offering. Again, a substitute. Because otherwise, if we didn't have that going on, guess what? I got to go up and I got to die. Right? No one wants to sign up for that plan. So we had this situation here. And we know the fulfillment. That's why today, I think people, I talked to a few people, people are saying this day is becoming more and more one of their favorite holy days. When you step back and understand from Genesis to Revelation what we're dealing with, what God had created, what Satan had substituted, what God has provided for now, he says, okay, I'm going to go with another substitute here. I'm going to substitute an animal's life for your life until the one came who was the perfect substitute. I want to read a quote from Charles Spurgeon. He was lived in the late 1800s. He was a theologian and a minister. He has this quote. In one word, the great pillar of the Christian's hope is substitution. the vicarious sacrifice of Christ for the guilty. Christ being made sin for us that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. You might recognize that last part of his quote, that 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21. That's just the most awesome concept we have, and I think in Christianity that gives us most hope, is that Christ became that perfect substitute for us because we had no covering. We had nothing we could offer. There was nothing that could be done. We should have been in that spot. We should have died. But he became that perfect sacrifice, the one who knew no sin, and died in our place. Died in our place. Let's go to 1 Peter 3, verse 18. 1 Peter 3 and verse 18. He became that substitute, that replacement for us. It's a concept that's central. It's a pillar in our walk, in our faith. We very much talk about that at Passover, but it is a theme that's strong within the Day of Atonement as well. 1 Peter 3 and verse 18. For Christ also suffered once for sin, the just for the unjust. He said, as the just one, I will take the place of the one who is unjust, the one who should have died, the one who should have been sacrificed, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit. I thought, too, there's so much. If you have extra time this afternoon when you go back, the book of Hebrews, you could just read so much. If you want to read, that's where I would go this afternoon before you fall asleep, potentially. Hebrews 9, you go there. Just look at a couple verses, because this concept of substitution, substitutionary atonement, one who took our place, major part of this day. Hebrews 9. This concept in verse 24, he has not entered the holy places made with hands. Verse 25, not that he should offer himself often, as the high priest enters the most holy place every year with the blood of another. He then would have had to suffer often since the foundation of the world, but now once, at the end of the ages, he has appeared to take away sin by the sacrifice of himself. And then in chapter 10, verse 12, but this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sin, forever sat down at the right hand of God, from that time waiting till his enemies are made his footstool. That is such a great theme of this day, the sacrifice, the substitution that Jesus Christ willingly made. I want to talk about one last substitution. I think I'm a math guy. I don't think I can stump him yet, so I'm going to leave him go over there. But one last substitution. Let's go to Revelation 3xy equals 29. That should keep him going for a while. Okay. Okay. All right. Revelation 20. I was talking to some people again today. We were talking about it last night at the house again. It's hard to think about a situation, a life, a world without the influence of Satan. Right? It's all we've known. Right? The last substitution that takes this place, Satan comes off that throne and Jesus Christ takes that throne. That spirit of Satan that is alive and well today that dominates our world. That's why I don't have to say many details. There's nothing for me. I'm not going to give you five stories of things that are happening that are so crazy and horrible. And we know it. We know it when we go anywhere around. We know it in ourselves, in our relationships, in situations, because that spirit is alive. It's hard to picture a time when that won't be the case. But today is that day. We look forward to that last substitution when that spirit of Satan is replaced by God's spirit. Look at Revelation 20. Revelation 20. Verse 10. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire with brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. We talk about it, we read these words, we see them, but this is something that's hard for us to grapple with, right? Hard to understand that time can come. That time is coming. And I think I said the verses that are difficult to read, because we go back and you go back to that Genesis account and what happened with Adam and Eve. They were set in such a beautiful situation. You think, how could that have happened? Well, we know our lives. We know how we react. We know that, and we understand the power of Satan. And that set off the human history that we know. What's a difficult verse, and this verse comes up all the time, and someone asked me about it last week. I read verse 10. Let's go to verse 7 in that chapter. And I'm going to say right up front, I don't have all the answers, but I think it's an interesting one. I think I have one additional thought, because it's one that's very difficult to read. Because this happens at the end, but it says in verse 7, when the 1,000 years had expired, Satan will be released from his prison. Right? Remember the Garden of Eden was so beautiful, so perfect? How do you think it's going to look at the end of the millennium? Will it be beautiful? Will it be perfect? And I just had this thought as this morning. I was thinking about that parallel between those two spots. Beautiful. And when Satan entered the garden, what happened? Quick victory, right, for the bad guys. Satan now enters at the end of the millennium. Look what it says in verse 8. He goes out to do what? To deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to enter, to gather them together to battle, whose numbers is as the sand of the sea. It's staggering to me. Until we remember who the adversary is. How could he go at that time, after all that time has passed in this beautiful situation, and convince people, not only 3 or 4, right? That'd be a comical situation if he came with his band of merry men there and said, okay, God, we're ready now. Let's battle. No. 4 corners of the earth. Think of me, it just struck. This is a painful thing to read because we know what happened. God quickly puts an end to this. And it's hard to read this. Hard to comprehend that. And sometimes I struggle and I try to make sense of that. And I came with one additional thought today, and I thought, maybe again it just shows again we have no solution against the enemy. We as human, these are human beings, right, who are deceived again. I think God finally once and for all says there is there's no way to coexist. Right? Satan has to be removed and separated once and for all. Like it was back in Leviticus 16. I didn't talk about that second goat, right? That second goat where they did what? Man took it out to the wilderness and they heaped all those sins out and you had to separate. He'd never be seen again. Gone, 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 gone. There was any doubt. I don't know why it has to unfold this way at the end. If you have the answer to that, I would love to know. It's a hard read. But again, it puts an exclamation point on the adversary and who he is. Who he is from the beginning, who he is now. And that's why I make that point to the young people. He is an adversary. He is a deceiver. He is here to destroy lives. Right to the very end. To the very end, that is what happens. Until it says, God came down out of heaven and devoured them with fire. It's a tough read, but God will finally come and substitute that system with his glorious, eternal, peaceful rule. Go back to Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31. That final substitution, when that spirit in man that commingled with the spirit of Satan can't exist with God. There's separation. And God says, finally in Jeremiah 31, in verse 31. We look forward to this verse. We read this verse, and I hope it finds a little more context based on what we're talking about today. Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I'll make a new covenant with Israel and the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt. My covenant they broke when I was a husband to them. But this covenant will I make with the house of Israel after these days. I will put my law in their minds. I will put it inside them. I will put my spirit in them. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. There is that day coming when God is going to substitute out Satan. And that spirit that is so prevalent, you read in Romans 5 where it talks about that spirit in man that is hostile to God. There's a hostility that Satan has put on the scene that's in the world today. That God says, one day I will remove that system, I will remove the leader of that system, and I will write my spirit. And I start to think sometimes that's right, because we know we've walked this, we've seen the battle, we have the battle scars, and aren't we ready for God to say, write your spirit, write your law fully in my heart? A time when Satan's influence is no longer there. It's a day of letting yourself dream a little. How many times do we sit and we go, boy, I wish my spirit was different, or this and that. I succumb so easy. God says that day is coming for those who are his. He will put that spirit, will be there. And it's hard to picture the peace, the unity, things that will be present, because that influence that's been there since the garden. Since the garden. Setting up a whole different way, contrary to God's life. What God had done was good. He said it was very good. But quickly, Satan sold something different. And so today, this day of atonement, this day of covering, all the way back to the Garden of Eden, God covered man. Covered man, covered their sin, made a way of reconciliation back to him. The Day of Atonement, where we have the mercy seat with the blood, with the sacrifice that creates reconciliation where there has been separation because of sin. When we think of all the suffering of mankind, suffering that's out there today, that time is coming to an end because that rule is coming to an end. And that substitute, that Jesus Christ, that perfect substitute, that he came and died when we should have died. And he will come back and he will rule on his throne. And we look at that goat that symbolized in Leviticus 16 that was just taken away and so far gone, that Satan one day will be in that same spot, so far off the scene. Hard for us to imagine, but hopefully we have that seared in our mind and look forward to that time when he is off the scene, and the final substitution takes place when Jesus Christ and God the Father reign, that perfect, eternal, peaceful reign for all eternity. I wish all of you very, very safe and wonderful travels and a very, very meaningful Feast of Tabernacles, whether you're here or whether you're traveling, and very much look forward to being with everyone again after we all return.